the Trident Juncture Live X will take place in and around Norway from about 25 October to 7 November, with advanced activities in and around Iceland from October 15th to the 17th. It will be my privilege as the commander of Joint Force Command Naples to go up to Norway and be in command of more than 40,000 participants from 30 different countries. But I want to emphasize the relationship that I have in my headquarters with my deputy commander, and that is Lieutenant General Christian Junot, Canadian officer of the Vandoux Regiment. And General Junot will be on the ground, and he's an Army officer, extraordinarily talented, and so he will be in between Stavanger and Bodø. I am going to be where I belong in this navy blue uniform at sea. And I'm going to work out General Junot as the land commander for the better part of this exercise while I am providing oversight and monitoring at sea. I'm a huge believer in the alliance, and quite frankly, this is my fifth job on the continent of Europe. I feel very comfortable here. I've had three NATO commands, and it's my eighth year in the European theater. I'm a submariner. I spent 12 years of my life at sea, better part of my career in the Pentagon, bouncing back and forth between at-sea assignments and European assignments. And as I tell my friends in the alliance, I was born into NATO. My father was a Canadian officer, unlike General Junot, and he served in Rheindalen and Mönchengladbach at the NATO Land Component Command headquarters. And I'm very proud of that heritage. I carry a copy of the NATO Charter with me at all times in my briefcase, and I refer to it periodically because this is going to be an Article 5 operation. And I can tell you that I love the alliance and the greater international community with which we partner. First and foremost, the purpose of the exercise is NATO is a defensive alliance. So we're never looking for a fight, but we are committed to defend and deter. And those are two terms that I hear the Secretary General use a great deal in his conferences with you in the media and with allies and partners. And that's what this exercise is all about, training to defend and providing a deterrent effect, ready to respond to any threat from any direction at any time. Trident Juncture will show the world that NATO is relevant, united, and ready to defend itself in this Article 5 scenario, testing our collective defense. At the core of the exercise is the NATO Response Force, and that's what we are qualifying to take responsibility for. There are two Joint Force headquarters right now. The NRF responsibility resides with my counterparts in Brunson, and we are about to embark on the certification so that we can receive that that responsibility back in 2019. And within this exercise, we will have the 5,000 person spearhead force, otherwise known as the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force, or the VJTF, exercising in Norway. All in all, we've got 29 member nations participating, plus partners, Sweden and Finland. And those are the two of NATO's closest and most capable allies in the region. I've always enjoyed working with them, and I look forward to this opportunity as well. And I look forward to working with Norway and Admiral Olsen and Admiral Bryn Hansen and their team as fellow NATO members and hosts of the exercise. They're a very capable and committed NATO ally and have done a lot of work already to make Trident Juncture a huge success for the alliance. I was up there a couple of months ago in Bodø and Stavanger, and I was very impressed with the preparations that went on in the post-crisis response planning phase of the exercise. I met with Norway's Chief of Defense, Admiral Haakon Bryn Hansen, in February in Oslo, and he will come to see me for a counterpart visit in Naples in July. We have a fantastic relationship, not just between the Chad and myself, but with the forces and the joint force in Norway and our joint force command headquarters in Naples. And while I know he wishes that he could be part of this event with you, he was unable to do so, so I'm pleased to be here with Vice Admiral Kettle Olsen, wears the same color uniform that I do. And with that, I will turn over to Admiral Olsen to talk to you about Norway's role in the exercise. Sir.
Thank you, Admiral, for those kind words. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I will take you to Norway then in the October-November timeframe. Statistically, there will be rain and or snow and wind, and there actually might be a lot of it. The temperature will be around freezing point, which means that when you wake up in the morning, there will be a thin layer of ice on your water bucket and on the roads as well. The consequence of exercising so far north, just below the Arctic Circle, is that on day one of the exercise, you will be wet, and you will stay wet until the end unless you learn how to deal with it. And that's what it's all about, coming to Norway and doing the exercise up there. But as we say in Norway, we say it's worth defending. And that is what this exercise also is about, deterrence and defense, as the Admiral talked about. And Norway is very much looking forward to welcome our allies and partners in October, and we appreciate that NATO decided to challenge us as a host nation, which is a demanding test. NATO is the cornerstone of Norwegian security and defense policy. We are currently putting a lot of effort into modernizing the Norwegian armed forces, but as a small nation, we rely on NATO for collective defense. And a large-scale exercise as the Trident Juncture enhances NATO's capability to operate together as an alliance and further strengthen our cohesion. It demonstrates NATO commitment to reinforce and defend all allies in times of crisis, as well as NATO's ability to collective defense in the high north. In 2014, when Norway accepted to host Trident Juncture, we knew the exercise would demand extensive planning and preparations, both from the NATO side as well as from the Norwegian side as host nation. I'm pleased to say, Admiral, that we are on track. We work very closely with NATO on all levels and especially well with your headquarters. We have a common goal in keeping the pressure on civil society to a minimum. Trident Juncture 18 gives Norway a unique chance to test our total defense concept. The total defense describes the sum of pre-planned civilian and military efforts to handle a crisis. The Norwegian Armed Forces will cooperate and coordinate closely with civilian authorities as well as private businesses in order to handle the logistical aspects of deployment and sustainment of such a large force. The sheer size of the exercise gives Norway, as host nation, an excellent opportunity to realistically train reception and support of substantial allied reinforcements. And NATO, on the other side, gets to test their plans for the reinforcement of Norway. In sum, this strengthens our common capability to handle a crisis, should it ever come to that. And again, thank you, Admiral. We're looking forward to hosting NATO in October.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay, thanks. And with that, we can take some questions. Robin, so if you can just announce your full name and your outlet when you want.
Robin, Reuters. Could you say a bit more about the scenario? So you're going to be in Norway, you've got 40,000 strong participants, but what sort of attack is NATO going to come under, and what sort of time frame can it respond, and why these dates? Is it some kind of rolling attack over a certain period of time?
Why the dates? I think as we look at our exercise plan and we space things out through the year, you've watched in the last week or so as we have conducted Baltops in the Baltic Sea up north, and one of my commanders, Vice Admiral Lisa Franchetti, has followed in the footsteps of NATO commanders in command. She's the commander of Strike Force NATO, as well as the commander of 6th Fleet, and is exercising there now with 50 ships, about 5,000 personnel, and about 70 aircraft. And so as we look to connect to the fall exercise time frame, there's a couple of reasons why we do this at this time of year, and that is to stress the force. As the Admiral said, it's cold, and it's tough conditions up there. And that is challenging for the troops across the joint force, whether you're at sea. I'll be out on a flat-bottom ship in the late October in the North Atlantic, and it will be challenging for us as well as those troops who are on the ground or those who are flying aircraft throughout Norway. I don't want to go into the actual plan for the scenario, but suffice it to say that it's a response to an Article 5 scenario, a violation of sovereignty of a close ally, Norway, and NATO will respond. And we are testing our ability to get the very high readiness joint task force there in a timely manner. In fact, the large size of the force is going to be a test and taxing on the entire alliance, as well as the country of Norway. One of the things that we're doing in adaptation is we have realized that there is another domain of warfare, and that is the logistics domain, which past decades has gone, or we've taken it for granted. It's been relatively ignored. The plan is to upsize the Joint Force headquarters with a larger contingent of logisticians. I have a J4 who's a very capable Croatian general who is helping me with the support for these troops up there, and so it'll be very taxing on him and taxing on the troops as well as we move this force into the defense of Norway's strategic and sovereign territory. Sir, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I just want to point out that from the Norwegian perspective, this is sort of a stress test of what we are able to or capable of do concerning the receiving the alliance and all the forces coming in. So this has been a long time planning to get to where we are, both together with NATO, but also internally in Norway between the civilian and the military side to make sure that we are able to receive it. And as I said, it will be a stress test to make us understand better how it works and make sure that we are able to receive a force of this size should that be necessary.
Let me add to that too, because I was really impressed when I was in Norway with the total defense concept for the country of Norway. And Norway has a very strong conscription and training program, and now there will be people in key nodes, aviation points of departure and sea points of departure, APODs and SPODs, who will be facilitating us, not necessarily wearing a uniform. These are folks in the tower, air traffic controllers, people that are on the ground controlling switching networks for trains as we maneuver around the country. People that are on the highways and maintaining traffic safety and security. So pretty impressive what the Norwegians are going to bring to bear here in a seamless transition between the arrival of the larger force and the defense of their country. And they're on the pointy end of the spear. And that's something that I think the rest of the alliance and especially the American force will get an opportunity to understand. And We're very excited, and I know that the United States Marines that are participating in this exercise are extremely excited about being there. We've got a small contingent that's on the ground now in Varnes, and those Marines have been there for a better part of a year now.
A year,
yeah.
Yes.
And that force will augment as the force from the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force comes to bear as part of this exercise.
Yes, please.
Kuwait News Agency. So will you be inviting as observers from country partner countries from other parts of the world, like the Arab world and Asia?
Thank you. Too.
Yes, please.
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, as according to the Vienna document, as we go above 13,000 participants, it's we have to invite observers to the exercise, and we're very happy to do that. So whoever wants to come along as part of that Vienna documentation, it's you're invited and can come along and look at it, and there's a formal procedure for doing that. But as we said, the number of forces actually say that there will be observers invited. I don't know if you want
to clarify, it's OSCE member nations who are part of that process who are invited, not people outside the OSCE.
I might add that in the spirit of openness, this press conference is indicative of transparency on the part of the alliance. As I said, the alliance is about defend and deter. We don't look for reasons to conduct offensive operations anywhere. We are a defensive alliance. That's what Article 5 is all about. And we're transparent and open. A lot of our planning has taken place in the unclassified domain. We have given you the dates of the exercise today. We have told you the relative size of the contingent, and it continues to grow because there's significant interest in being a part of this. And so I think that's one of NATO's strengths, is we have no secrets, nothing to hide. This is a demonstration in a very transparent way of a capability, and we want people to know that. And you bet there will be some of our partners from very important Middle Eastern nations who will be there in observer status and also for DV Day.
For you, I've got three questions. I read that this is the biggest NATO exercise for recent years, it says. Do you have an exact date when you have such a large exercise the last time? That Admiral Clogger, you said that NATO's never looking for a fight, but yet maybe with Moscow's eyes seeing, you know, NATO plus Sweden and Finland practicing a violation of Article 5, they might beg to differ. How would you answer Moscow as saying that this is actually a defensive rather than offensive thing? And finally, do you actually expect Russian officials to be there and observe? I know they've been invited, but do you expect them to come? Thank you.
So I'll defer to my friends in the Office of Public Diplomacy on the last time that we had an exercise of this size. I will take the second part of your question. In that, no, we definitely are not looking for a fight. We're a defensive alliance, and you mentioned how would the Russians perceive this exercise. I think that's the value of transparency, and we have been open, and we have talked about what we are doing, why we are doing it. Certainly, there are security concerns on the part of valued partners, particularly Sweden and Finland, and this is about interoperability and training. They're very capable, incredible joint force as well. They are not members of the alliance, but they're very capable of defending themselves. And I would kind of turn the question around and say, where's the transparency on the other side from Moscow? So during Zapad, do we get this kind of a press conference, and do you see this kind of openness from the Russians? Is a SNAPEX something that builds confidence in the West when the Russians do a large 50,000 person snap exercise, and what are the motives behind that? I think it's this is a much more deliberate approach. It has a particular end state, and that is the training, interoperability, and qualification of a force to assume the NATO response force mantle of leadership for another year. So I think that's all goodness. As to whether or not the Russians come, I hope they do. They're invited. One of the things that we do in our headquarters once a year is sit down and dialogue with the Russians across the table at the Incidents at Sea Agreement. I think that's a very valuable exchange of information, of things that have happened in the maritime domain over the course of the last year that we may not like, or we may consider is not professional or safe behavior. They have their list as well, and we lay these on the table. We talk about it, and we try to figure out ways of avoiding these kinds of things in the future year, and confidence building measures between our forces. So you saw recently that Chairman Dunford, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, sat down with General Gerasimov in Helsinki last week, and that was on the heels of a similar meeting between my boss, General Scaparotti, and General Gerasimov in Baku. And I think those kinds of dialogue are very important. As Secretary General says, this is a two-track approach. So we want to show that the alliance can deter and defend, and that we are strong, and at the same time, we're willing to have a dialogue.
Yeah, if I just may add, because I think the key word here is transparency. And at the last, as was mentioned by Pierre, at the last NATO-Russia Council on the 31st of May, there was an exchange of exercises or briefings on exercises. And of course, we talked about Trident Juncture, and the Russians talked about the exercise Vostok. So I think that was a great way of doing it and exchanging views. And we also, from the Norwegian side, had a Norwegian delegation to Moscow to make sure that we could say a few things about the exercise and make sure that it is transparent. So it works both ways.
Just on the first question about the size, The last Trident juncture, which was in 2015, was about 36,000 personnel. But the biggest, the one that reached a level of 40,000, the last one was in 2002, an exercise called Strong Resolve, which was in Norway and Poland.
It's the biggest one in almost
16
years.
Yeah.
Mike, please, yes, for the interpreters.
No, sure, yeah. Of course. And may I ask, I know that probably won't be able to tell anything, but when you had this exchange of views at the NATO Russia Council about the different exercises, were there any objections raised by the Russians?
To
strike a junction. I mean, were there any questions, any question marks, objections about that? Sorry. I take the question again. At the NATO Russia Council on the 31st.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
At the NATO Russia Council on the 31st of May, were there any objections or question marks raised from the Russian side when it comes to Trident juncture? Sorry.
No, there was no questions raised. There was a discussion, a deliberate discussion on a couple of things, just to exchange or an exchange of understanding what the exercise was all about. But no objections, nothing coming out of that. No.
Yes, please.
I am Anni Lavuotinen from Finnish News Agency. I'm going to ask about partnership cooperation. Finland and Sweden are bringing to this exercise, and as a follow-up, when you think about this, the security situation of this whole region, would you welcome the idea that these countries would be part of NATO?
That's politics, sir.
Right. So what are they bringing? They're bringing elements of the joint force of both very capable militaries to the maritime domain and to the land domain. Again, the whole point is to be interoperable with these very capable partners and not members of the alliance. There are, of course, some limitations. As a member of the alliance, it can be more advantageous to you in some domains, but in the warfighting domain, I think that we're going to try to seamlessly integrate the forces of Sweden and Finland, and I've been in both countries during BALTOPS 2015, BALTOPS 2016. I've been on both sets of platforms on a Finnish mine countermeasures and mine laying ship with some of your naval cadets on board, and on a very capable Swedish corvette, and got underway and submerged on a Swedish submarine. Jens Nyquist and Admiral Typalis are very good friends of mine. I welcome them to this exercise, and I look forward to their continued partnership. As to the question of NATO membership, that is really a question for the Swedish and the Finnish people and their governments to resolve. Quite frankly, we're very happy to have such active partners in both countries, and I look forward to their contribution to the exercise. Norway may have some additional things to add.
Yes, thank you. I just want to mention that the regional understanding, the situational awareness, is something that we share in that part of the world, and I think it's important that we cooperate so we understand. That's also part of transparency, actually, to make sure that we understand what we are doing. So we do very frequently cross-border training already between Norway, Finland, and Sweden. A good cooperation, and there's also this Nordic Defense Cooperation, Nordefco, that's going on in the area. So we have a good basis and a good understanding for what we're doing. So as such, it's easy to bring them in. And I think, as the Admiral mentioned, interoperability is really an important thing in this, to be able to cooperate and to work together.
Let me just add one thing, too. This is an opportunity for us to give Swedish and Finnish forces something that they gave us in BALTOPS 15 and 16. And that is the ability for our forces, in particular some members of the alliance, like the United States Navy and the United States Marine Corps, to operate inside the Baltic in a very challenging archipelago. And we don't get the chance to do that very often. And those Marines who were ashore with me absolutely loved it. It was a tremendous experience for them. You know that they've had their boots on the ground and in the sand for a period of decades in wars in Iraq and conflict in Afghanistan. And so this was refreshing for them to get back to sea and to be on a different kind of a turf and a different kind of environment, very challenging environment. This one, is also going to be tough because of weather. You know, Baltops is in the summertime, so it's fairly pleasant up in the Baltic. It won't be so pleasant at this time of year in Norway, and that's part of the toughness training for the troops. In addition, I don't think there'll be any problem on the Swedes and the Finns. You guys are used to it, and you'll probably teach us a thing or two.
Time for one more question. Is there any more questions? Okay, Robin again.
When it comes to the exercise itself, it sounds like it's a conventional attack. Would you also factor in any electronic warfare or any hybrid attacks? And then more in the real world, perhaps a question for the Norwegian. What is the nature of the threat in Norway? For instance, we know in the Baltics that there are Russian-speaking communities, and that's often given as a reason why they might be vulnerable to an attack. But what's the risk to Norway?
I'll just take a stab at the first part of the question, Robin. Great question. And I think the alliance has come of age in its embracing of cyber and space as two additional very important domains in warfare. Centers of excellence throughout the theater, particularly in Estonia, that deal with cyberspace. And we cannot ignore that precursor to an Article 5 violation. The Deputy Supreme Allied Commander, General Everhart, and I were traveling in the Balkans recently. He said, hey, have you read this book? It's called War in 140 Characters by David Patrick Karakos. It talks about a new way of warfare. And if, in fact, the precursor to war becomes the war itself, we have to think through how we fight in the 21st century. So that's very much part of our thinking and our planning for this particular exercise, without me going into any great detail on the operational side. But that's a great question. And it's the second part I'll yield to my Norwegian friend.
Thank you. I think that as of today, we don't see a real threat to Norway, a day-to-day threat. We don't feel it that way. On the other hand, Norway is a very small country living next to a very big country, Russia, and of course, as such, we have to live with that, which we do quite professionally, I would say. We cooperate with the Russians very well on the borderline, with the fishery protection up north in the Barents Sea, and also on search and rescue issues. I think we have a professional neighborhood and the way we deal with things. So we see a more assertive Russia than we have seen for quite a few years, but from day to day, we don't feel it as a threat, no.
Okay, thank you very much, Admiral Fogo, Admiral Olsen. Admiral Olsen, thank you very much for your time. And thank you, our colleagues, journalistic colleagues who have come. Do stay in touch with us over the coming months, and we'll let you know more as time moves on, as we get close to the exercise. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.